Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 58. Dave, the Steelers are in the playoffs. They are the champions of the AFC North. They win a heart-stopping 39-38 game over the Baltimore Ravens at Heinz Field, their fourth consecutive night game. A game that there's just so much to talk about in terms of the ups and downs of this game. But at the end of the day, the Steelers, they win it. They're the new cardiac kids. They win another game where they give up a big lead. They have to come from behind from a big deficit. And Chris Boswell does the job in the defense after being terrible the whole game, makes two stops at the end, and they get the win. What did you think?
Do you shalieve?
I think everybody's pretty shalieved about everything, not only the game, but obviously seeing Ryan Shazier on FaceTime last night.
Boy, absolutely. And, T-shirts for a second year in a row that you get by clinching against the Ravens. Probably doesn't get much better than that. Obviously, you would like to have not had to do it in the fashion that they had to do it in, but the fact of the matter is they did do it, and that's all that matters at this point. There's a lot to clean up on the defensive side of the ball, and I'm sure we're going to get to most of that. But what have we learned about this team, David, in the last, say, 3 to 4 weeks?
I'll tell you, Dave, the thing that's, I think, most interesting is this team is exactly now the team that finished last year in a lot of people's minds. This is and maybe what a lot of people expected coming into the season. It's an offensive dynamo that is, with Ben's play now being kind of the best of Ben, it's an elite offensive team right now. And defensively, it looks like it certainly last night looked like what we saw at the end of the last season against the Patriots, where they got torn apart. The tackling's bad. The pass defense was bad. I mean, the script has completely flipped from September.
Yeah, this was a team carried by the defense to start off with, and the offense, where's the 30 points a game? And then, yeah, you're right. The script has flipped, and now it's the offense kind of moving the ball at will. Well, the offense had been moving the ball at will a lot during the season. It was, the problem was they couldn't score once they got inside the opposition's 20-yard line. So moving the football, I think that's something that's probably lost in all of this. This is the difference between the offense now and these last, three, four games is they're actually getting into the end zone, whereas before that they weren't. Now, of course,
red zone productivity, huge difference, right?
And of course, last night there are these certain unexplainable kind of lulls that they go through where, I mean, if you eliminate some of those lulls, maybe they're scoring, 40-something points a game or something along those lines. But, the only thing I will say about the offense, make no mistake about it. Killer bees, and it's really the three-plus Boswell right now. It is Roethlisberger, it is Bell, it is obviously Antonio Brown and Chris Boswell. It's sure, now we did, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, we saw some contributions from some welcome spots against the Ravens, but you would just like to see, Eli Rogers do a little bit more. You would just like to see, Martavis Bryant. When is he going to have that, 130-yard, two-touchdown game? the running game, as good as Bell has been, most definitely as a wide receiver or out of the backfield as a pass catcher. And look, he's breaking a few nice runs here and there when they count. There are these times where you go, man, I just wish this running game could get a little bit better. But if that's the worst thing right now, okay. But you know, I think there's going to come a point, you know, in these next, you know, maybe starting in week 15 and probably in the playoffs, where they're going to need contributions, you know, from people other than Antonio Brown. And right now with Martavis Bryant, I mean, he makes these easy catches over, you know, at the sideline on these kind of out routes for 8-9 yards. But man, you just keep waiting for, like I said, that big, you know, 130-yard game and 2-touchdown performance. But offense, Ben, I'd say Ben still has it, David. I mean, he was dropping some throws last night right in the old trash can like they practiced at Latrobe there. And even the ones that were incomplete, man, those were some close passes that you like. And you know, what can you say about AB? Man, I can't wait to see that guy when his toe gets healed.
Yeah, I mean, this was a stunningly good offensive performance. And because, as you point out, the lull was, you know, three consecutive trips to start the second half, I think, you know, there was, as we see all the time, the griping on Twitter got out of control, and Steeler fans came out, you know, the Ravens won the battle of halftime adjustments, blah, blah, blah. Look, you know, you have one bad play on first down, all of a sudden it's second and 10, or you have a penalty, it makes it difficult to you know, sometimes get those first downs. And the Steelers, I guess, went 5 plays on their first drive and then back-to-back 3-and-outs. And remember, the Steelers had disastrous time of field position to start that second half. And they're opening 4 drives of the second half. They started at the 17 on the first kickoff that Bryant went to the right side and then got stuffed. You remember the bobble for the second kickoff. They started on the 9. I think the third kickoff, he got out to the 20. And the fourth kickoff, I think, was the 14. So the Steelers, I mean, bad field position that limits and adjusts the play calling a little bit. And the Steelers, you know, didn't overcome that until the fourth drive. And obviously what you hear by that is the Ravens weren't having any trouble scoring on the Steelers because they were kicking off every time they had the ball. They were putting points up on the board. So, I mean, it was a fascinating game to watch. And Dave, you know, we spent so much of our time because when you're critiquing, it's very easy to say this was good and then move on because the good doesn't need to be critiqued. And our job as analysts, I think, you know, it's not we spend too much time talking about what went wrong, but you're trying to talk about the things that went wrong and diagnose to, you know, obviously the constant goal is to make the team play better for Mike Tomlin and the coaching staff and the players. So we're trying to think along with them, what do they want to do better? Because the things they're doing well, you hope they just continue doing that. And, you know, just offensively, you know, look, the numbers were fantastic again. Just the, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. I'll tell you the difference for me in what we saw in this game was it seemed like Ben's first objective was to take what was there. And we saw it from the very beginning with the tight ends making 4 catches in the first quarter and finishing the game with 13 between them. And we'll get into kind of Vance McDonald's injury and all of that. But it's, you know, taking the stuff and then taking shots rather than what I think a lot of people will perceive, and I think we perceive to some degree, was taking a lot of deep shots early in the season without necessarily taking all the underneath stuff. So to me, that's a big step forward. It did lead to a massive number of pass attempts, a career high, I think, for Ben at 66, and became the first quarterback ever to have 3 500-yard games. But, you know, he did what he needed to do. Four possessions in the first half and points on the board first time, 4 times, 20, much like the first Cincinnati game. And then the second half, well, it was, you know, desperation rallying and they were able to do it. So, you know, before getting to the defense, just, you know, you point out, I think correctly, that you want to have some variety on the offense. But You know, 13 catches from the tight end, some really, you know, huge catches by Eli Rogers, the 3rd and 15, where the offensive line gave Ben a ton of time and they got 16. That was a massively big play in that game. I'm with you. You want more from Martavis. They didn't even have Juju in this one. But, you know, with Ben, Brown, and Bell, it's just never say die. That offense is capable of amazing things.
Yeah, I think the thing that sticks out to me sort of in my notes here when you talk about the offense, obviously without Juju, the game plan was, and you had Vance McDonald back, it was to try to utilize McDonald and James as much as possible to help eliminate the loss of Juju, and they did that. Look, I give Jesse James a ton of you know, crap at times, if you will, especially when it comes to his blocking. And as the most part, as a receiver, he's never been that you know, huge average yards per catch guy, or the guy to get a lot of yak after the catches. You have to take your hat off and hand it to him last night. Targeted 12 times, 10 receptions, 97 yards, a 9.7 yard per catch average. Had a long of 18 in there. I haven't had a chance to pay too close attention to how his blocking was, but was there a bigger catch in the game than third and what was it on the final?
Yeah, 15 to Eli Rogers, 3rd and 15 to Eli.
No, there was another one they converted there. That was a long one. It was a second and wait a minute here. No, it was a 3rd and 13, right after the 2-minute warning, David.
To Jesse, right up the inside the numbers. Yeah, for sure, that was a huge play.
I got to admit, when they were facing that 3rd and 13, I was already thinking ahead. Okay, what's going to be the yardage on 4th down? And they have to go for it, right? That was my.
Well, thing. You're right about this, because this was if taking people back. If you remember, Ben got sacked on the first down play. And he lost 9 yards on that play. And Dave, my first thought was the Super Bowl. Back to, if people remember the Super Bowl against Arizona, Ben, the Steelers needed a scoring drive, and Ben got sacked on the first play, if I remember correctly, and it put him down, you know, down in distance. This was a situation where if you wanted to think the game was over, they have, 2nd and 19 from the 8. And they run that little dump to Jesse James to get 6 yards, and they have the 2-minute warning. And then on 3rd and 13, you know, this is a play where, you know, like Dave and like everybody watching, you're thinking, what are they going to do here? Because they have all their timeouts. Would you punt if you and they actually Al Michaels asked Chris Collinsworth on the broadcast, if you get no yards here and you're on the 14, what do you do? And I'm not sure what the right answer is, because, you know, you're going to put them in field goal. They're going to be in field goal range with, you know, Boomer Leg no matter what, you know, almost regardless of the punt. So I'm guessing you go for it. But as you point out, that pass to Jesse James on third and 13 to get 16 was massive from there. And the Steelers, they did face another 3rd down there on that that they ran. Then they went deep. We'll have to get to that. But, yes. Your point is superb. That was a huge play.
Yeah, that was a huge play. Great catch by Jesse James to get the first down there. When was the last time, Dave, I didn't have time to research this yet. When was the last time the Steelers had two tight ends combined for, what was it, 14?
13 catches and
14 receptions. McDonald had 4. Jesse James had 10.
Okay, 10. Okay.
So when was the last time?
The last time is when his career high was 10. So the answer is probably never. He had 10, in his last season, he did it twice against the Bengals. I think he did it 3 or 4 times in his career that he had 10 catches. So, you know, I'm guessing it wasn't, you know, maybe never is the answer. But, you know, with Jesse having 10 last night, it tells you a lot, you know, a lot of what you need to know.
I'm trying to remember. I mean, Jesse's rookie season was Heath's last, right? So was there a game in there where Heath had, You know, maybe
10 eight. Against Cincinnati, and yeah, Jesse had 4. Possible.
It'd be something. I'm drawing a blank here, trying to think about it. But and look, Vance. I guess we're gonna be all over the place today with this one. But you know, when the Steelers signed Vance McDonald, David, I was, you know, I liked the signing. I liked the price tag on him.
The trade.
I was acceptable to the fact that he came with a little bit of baggage with the drops there. You know, I didn't mind the trade and the player there. And when he's been healthy this year, I mean, he's been an awesome blocker and, you know, got over a few of the early season drops there and went on the field. He's making a few plays here. In fact, early in that game, that kind of running up kind of an out and up there and Ben hit him right in stride. That shows you the kind of things that Vance McDonald can do. The problem is, I keep having to say when he's on the field, and you know, unfortunately for him, you know, we'll have to see how serious his shoulder injury is that he suffered during the second half that he wasn't able to return to the game for.
And I'll have to tell you, we try not to read the tea leaves too much without having, you know, good info. But when Mike knows that he couldn't come back in and he couldn't come back in, I just. You know, I'm expecting the worst here, like a separation or something that's going to keep him out for some period of time. Because, again, upper body injuries like that, guys often fight through that stuff during the game unless it's, you know, you got a structural issue. So, unfortunately, I'm not expecting good news again on Vance McDonald.
And if it's not, and I was thinking about this earlier this morning, man, you know, If it's a 3-week injury, you know, do you keep him around? If it's a 3 to 6, you know, what do you do? You know, they sure could use a guy like Vance McDonald in there for all that he does. And I started thinking, man, I wonder if that injury is serious, if we're going to see Jake McGee come up from the practice squad. You know, this is a guy that we talked about a lot during, I think, like the final or the middle 2 preseason games, or maybe it was the final 2 preseason games. A guy that can definitely block, especially on the move, and a guy that, you know, might be able to get up the field a little bit for you as well too. So and you know, to read, you know, kind of between the lines on some of these reports you see here and there on practice squad players, he's evidently done good, you know, as a practice squad member. So keep that in the back of your head, listeners, right now. If something, you know, if the injury to Vance McDonald is serious, maybe you see a guy like Jake McGee get promoted to the 53-man roster. But definitely, it seemed to be in the game plan to use those guys with Juju out, and you know, at least he made it through 2/3 of a game. And you just wish if a guy like Vance McDonald could stay healthy. And yes, I have not forgot about Xavier Grimble, but you know, Grimble's been kind of a very hit and miss kind of guy during his Steelers career, and he, you know, he'd probably be the next guy up like he was during those 3-4 weeks that McDonald's been sidelined, but definitely not the blocker that Vance McDonald is. And Eli Rogers, yeah, he had a clutch catch in that. What about that catch by Roosevelt Nix on the touchdown? Does that qualify enough as a wacky enough touchdown?
That qualifies as the wacky touchdown. One of the best lines I saw was somebody said, I think it was Andrew McCutchen of all people said, I've never seen an offensive player make a touchdown catch and a tackle on the same play. As he landed on top of, stole the ball away, whatever you want to say, from Tony Jefferson on that touchdown. And you know, Ben kind of firing it in there, you know, felt a little desperate when he threw the ball, but it obviously worked, and the Steelers got the TD there. And, you know, look, they needed all the points. And there's so many things to talk about in this, Dave. And most of it positive from the offense, but let's talk about the three things. One is, early on, it was the Le'Veon Bell show. He takes that slant for the touchdown. He breaks away from Tony Jefferson and then runs over in between Eric Weddle and one of the other DBs, And then, you know, on his 1 yard touchdown run, you know, he kind of bounces it outside. They feature the block by Chris Hubbard. And, you know, he runs over, I think, Tony Jefferson again on that one. So early and great from Le'Veon Bell, right? I mean, you know, what you expect to see and good stuff in the first half.
I think on that short on Bell's first on his 1 yard touchdown, I think key block by McDonald there, and I was going back through the tape, and that Hawkins in there. Hawkins gets him a pancake. He's on the end of the line, I think, on that short run as well too. So nice score there, and it's good to see them be able to get the short yardage run from, you know, deep down in the Ravens area there. And look, I mean, I don't know what you were thinking at that point, David. I mean, obviously the Ravens came out, and we're obviously jumping back and forth here. The Ravens moved the football on their first drive, converted a couple of third downs there, and then Joe Flacco inexplicably throws to the middle of the field, and Sean Davis gets the interception there. But after the Steelers were up 14-0 after they scored that second touchdown, I'm not sure what was going through your head, but I'm really, I was thinking, man, maybe the Steelers will hit 50 right on the nose, and this will be one of these 50-10 games or something like that.
The reason I wasn't thinking that is, even though Flacco threw the interception, it did look like the Ravens weren't having much trouble moving the football. So I was concerned, you know, felt good, obviously, but was concerned about kind of the Steelers' defense just getting stops, because they got down to the 40 for that first interception, and obviously they moved the ball pretty well the second time, and then chose to punt from right, you know, on the edge. It would have been, I think, a 56, 57-yard field goal, so we'll call that the edge of Tucker's range. So, you know, two stops, but they weren't kind of three-and-out stops. So I have to say, it was still, unfortunately, portending what was going to happen. I was worried about where the defense was.
Yeah, you know what? Look, I mean, I can forgive coming out there and giving up a little bit yardage on that first drive, but the fact of the matter is that just the way, you know, the flow of the game was going at that point. You know, you had a takeaway, then you had the offense march the field and score twice. I was forgiving of the fact of the Ravens being able to move the football a little bit, because how many times this year have we seen teams kind of move the football on the Steelers, but you know, just did not score. I mean, the Detroit Lions game was a perfect example of that for sure. But from 14-0, it started to go in the other direction then, didn't it?
It did. And let's finish up the offense. Just a couple. Let's talk a little bit about Ben and AB and what they did. First of all, you know, Brown's numbers, just insane. And I just I did a little bit of I put some numbers together, Dave, just to put perspective for some people. Antonio Brown so far this season, the NFL record, 1964 by Calvin Johnson. I think everybody's kind of familiar with that number, just short of 2000 as the all-time single season receiving mark. And Antonio Brown's career high is 1834, which is fourth all time. And he got that 2 years ago. So 1834 yards. He's currently at last night with 1509 yards, which would be a pace for 1858. So just above his top. He's averaging 116 yards a game. There are two things, just general questions about Antonio Brown. One is, realistically, I don't expect Antonio Brown to play much or at all against the Browns in week 17. So I think it's unrealistic to think that not only is he going to break the NFL record, but is he even going to catch his own career high? Two is Antonio Brown in the MVP race? And Antonio Brown's not going to win the MVP. So, you know, by definition, I think that means maybe you're not in the race, Dave. But he's certainly going to be on the radar. And if he is to win it, or to have any chance to win it, he'll have to have a game like last night, this weekend, where, and the Steelers defense will have to take apart Tom Brady, you know, both of which are, I guess, a bit unlikely after watching last night, but that would do it. And then just last and not least on Antonio Brown, as you point out, I mean, got a little bit of a toe injury and wasn't able to, you know, on a ball that was clearly out of bounds, wasn't able to make that catch early in the game down that right sideline. But three straight times separates from Brandon Carr on the same type of play on that right sideline. I mean, is it still as – I mean, I don't know. There's been no drop-off in his play over the last 3 or 4 years. He's still the best receiver in the game.
Julio who? And that's it. And look, that's no disrespect. I'm just having some fun here because if there's one other player, kind of a different build, kind of big boy wide receiver that you'd like to watch play, it's Julio Jones. And now that he's back in the league, Josh Gordon probably going to be in back in that conversation here soon next season if he keeps his nose clean. Man, he believe it or not, he needs 456 yard receiving yards to break Calvin Johnson's all-time single-season receiving yardage record. Odds-wise, you would say, man, especially if the Steelers do what they're supposed to do, you would say no way he's going to break that because you would hopefully hope that he's on the sideline for that season finale against the Browns. But I, you know, when it comes to AB, you never say never with these things. Now, your question about MVP, man, it's so hard for a wide receiver to win. To win the MVP award,
but it never happened.
But with you know, if there was a guy that could do it, I mean, it's him. But I think you're right. A, it would take a performance similar to what he had against the Ravens, but he has to have that against the Patriots. And like it or not, the Steelers have to win that game because you could put up 300 receiving yards if you don't win the game, nobody cares. So he's going to have a game like that. And to be honest with you, the only way he has a game like that is if we have a game similar to what we had last night where Ben has to throw it 40 or 50 times in a game. So,
or 66.
Yeah, or 66. You know, we how many times, you know, over the years recently – more recently than not, have we said, man, Steeler fans better not take for granted what they have in Ben Roethlisberger because, you know, after he leaves, retires, yada, yada. You are seeing a guy in Antonio Brown that, I mean, easily now, it's no longer arguably the best wide receiver in the league. I mean, it's now he is the best wide receiver in the league.
And I think has been. I think you know, over the 5 year span, you know, any particular year, you might argue some guy was right there with him. But I mean, there's no question over the last 5 years that he's been the best receiver in football.
Now, if he stays healthy and Lord, I mean, just no sign. Here's the thing is how is his career going to be affected when Roethlisberger finally does, you know, leave? You know, will a quarterback be, you know, whoever it is, be able to have the same rapport with him? That because let's face it, a lot of what way Ben plays into helping Antonio Brown. I mean, because how many times have we seen Ben connect with AB after 2.7 seconds in the pocket? You know, those kind of things. But the chemistry those two guys have together is unreal. Now, we don't need to spend any more time praising AB. I think everybody all gets that. You know, when it comes to talking about Roethlisberger, the thing that stuck out to me last night about the game, yes, he was, and he's been doing this now for a few games. He's been taking what is, you know, and we heard him talk about this earlier in the season. I got to do a better job of taking what is given me underneath instead of forcing this, that, and the other. He's obviously doing that. That wasn't new last night. I think kind of something that we saw last night, which he's kind of, I think, struggled with against the Ravens in the past, is identifying, getting them to commit to what their coverage is pre-snap. And the Ravens are one of the best teams to disguise what they do. And let's make no mistake about it. These two teams have played each other enough. They know what each other's going to do, but there's still the times where the Ravens do such a great job of disguising their coverages that, you know, the Ben has a little bit of trouble post snap. Well, last night I thought he did a great job with the hard count at certain points of the game at getting the Ravens to commit to showing what they were going to do and not giving them enough time to check out of it. And here's something else. When Ben sees single high and he knows it's single high, I don't care if it's second and one, third and one, fourth and one, third and three, whatever. If he's got AB lined up outside and he sees cover one, he's probably going to take a shot. And, you know, I mean, and he hit. He hit last night on a few of those against cover one. And why would the Ravens – and look, you know, Marlon Humphrey got the start in place of Jimmy Smith last night. And people going into this game and say, man, is that going to be the Ravens' weakness, losing a guy like Jimmy Smith? I didn't think they missed Jimmy Smith in that game. I think their weakness in that game was Brandon Carr, because AB was all over him in that game, and you know, that was the guy that they decided to attack, and they did. But Ben, you know, not enough good things can be said about how Ben played. And more importantly, you know, one thing we haven't even really hit on yet is zero turnovers for the Steelers in this game. When you get into this type of football against teams like the Bengals and the Ravens in this coming week against the Patriots, you cannot turn the football over. I mean, obviously you don't want to do that in any given game, but most definitely down the stretch here in these games against these opponents. And they took care of the football last night. Yeah, there was a time or two where Ben probably, you know, you're wondering why the heck you're throwing that one there, but that's going to happen when you throw the football 66 freaking times like they did. But a great game by Ben, a great game obviously by AB. Bell, fantastic out in the pass patterns. We already hit on the tight ends, and you know what else? You know, the offensive line I thought did a very admirable job last night.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is, you know, the conversation about Ben and AB, and this is always going to be the situation with a quarterback and a wide receiver. The wide receiver can't put up the numbers without the quarterback. And that's why it's virtually impossible for a wide receiver to win the MVP award, because you say, okay, well AB caught passes for 200 some yards. Well, Ben threw for 500. So, you know, maybe it pales in comparison. This might be the situation. Look, there's no question that the Steelers go as Ben Roethlisberger goes. But still, I ran a poll on this a few weeks ago, and I'm sure the outcome would be the same. You know, I said, who's the Steelers MVP? Ben, AB, Bell, or Cam Hayward? And it was a landslide for AB. I think it was like 84%, his number. And so, look, Ben is more important to the Steelers' success than Antonio Brown. Doesn't mean Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell can't be the MVP of this team. And I do think that's where they are this year. And Dave, I think you hit on everything spot on. Just on the offense, just at the end of the game, just to make sure we hit some of this stuff while we're talking about the offense, is, you know, if I were going to critique a couple things in the negative, it would be, one, I have no idea what Mike or Todd or Ben were thinking about at the end of the last drive, throwing on second or third and third down, with the Ravens having one timeout left, you know, 40-some seconds left in the game, and, you know, still being pretty damn far away on the 26-yard line. So 43, 44-yard field goal for Boswell. Now, look, I understand if you're going to throw a wide receiver screen or, you know, a really safe pass, but Ben's pass on second down, to me, might have been one of the most ill-advised play calls you'll ever see. I mean, all of a sudden, Dave, Drew Brees on Thursday night against the Falcons ran through my head when he threw that ball up there. Yeah, people remember Brees threw an interception in the end zone when they're in field goal range to tie the game. Ben steps back and almost immediately just kind of lobs a ball down the right sideline to Xavier Grimble, of all people, with two guys in trail coverage and a safety coming over. And thank God the ball hit the turf, because Grimble wasn't open, and fortunately the ball didn't hang up long enough for the safety to get over. But my heart was in my throat on that play, and I didn't get the play call at all. So then I assumed they would run on third down. And if you remember the play, that's when Ben scrambles out to his left And it looks like maybe he has some guys, Eli Rogers, and I can't remember who the other receiver was, whether it was Martavis, but the ball kind of harmlessly falls, fortunately, as Ben is falling down as he throws it. Again, you know, heart in your throat type of play. So the Steelers gain no yards. They're kicking the field goal. They don't force the Ravens to use their third timeout, and there's still 40-some seconds left. If I'm going to critique something, that was some terrible choices there that the Steelers got away with because, you know, we've talked enough about Justin Tucker's leg and a timeout and a chance to just, you know, get a couple first downs or a couple 20-yard plays. And boom, as we've seen the Steelers do it with 30 seconds and no timeouts each of the past two games against the Packers and the Bengals, certainly the Ravens against the way the Steelers were playing defense, that was a possibility.
Well, I think more than anything, look, I mean, I think after that first down, first and 10 run where Bell gets 2 yards, you make them burn, you know, the Ravens burn their second timeout at that point.
Yep, love that. Love that call.
They're obviously going to stack the, you know, they think you're going to run at that point on the next two downs. So they're obviously, and make, you know, Bell on the ground, the Steelers weren't great for the most part in that game. So you're thinking, oh, okay, well, if we run on second down here against a stacked box, we're probably not going to get any yardage. And then, yeah, we're going to get them to burn their third and final timeout.
Which I think there is, this is a great question. And this, you know, I think in critiquing it, you know, I think there are a lot of possible answers. And mine would be, again, not necessarily 100%. Again, in fact, a play action pass, I like the call. But, you know, kind of like we go back to that play all the time against the Jets in the AFC Championship game on 4th and 6th or 3rd and 6th, whatever, where Ben rolls right and throws to Antonio Brown. It seemed at best an odd play choice to throw that kind of lob to Xavier Grimble of all people on that play.
Okay, but let's agree. Let's say that instead of that pass to Grimble with 56 seconds left, let's suppose they ran there. You're still going to be fair, and let's say they didn't get any yards.
That's fair. That's legit. That's a legit choice.
Okay, so you're still going to be running a 3rd and 8 play with probably 52 seconds left on the clock. So the time.
Right, but now the Ravens have no timeouts, and that really limits them using the middle of the field in their last possession.
Okay, but here's the thing. You know, what do you do? Okay, let's say you still get to 3rd and 8 with the same amount of time on the clock. You know, then what do you do? Do you run and try to get 1 yard?
Well, if you run and you use it takes 5 seconds to run the play.
Right,
you
still use clock time. I get it, because you can run another, 20?
40 seconds off.
40 seconds off, then call a timeout.
And you're down, the game's 10 or 15 seconds left.
Right. So I get the thinking there, but, I mean, how many times have we seen the Steelers offense in situations where we all think they should take the safe avenue and run? That they throw to try to win the game, you know.
I will tell you, I rarely argue to take the safe avenue. But the thing is here, and you just took us through it just perfectly, is you can get the clock down to 15 seconds. Now look, Boswell can miss the field goal, whatever. He's going to kick it from the same spot in the analogy we just drew. So you know, I've got all the confidence in the world in Boswell. Look, I might think differently about this if they're playing any other team but the Ravens and Justin Tucker. But because his range is so extraordinary and he seemingly never misses, I just felt like if you can cut the game down, and I really do think it's significant to say 45 seconds with a timeout or 10 or 15 seconds with no timeouts. I mean that's a no-brainer. I think the Steelers made a big tactical error.
If they complete that pass to Grimble, are you objective enough to you know, still look at it and say there's no way in hell I would have done that?
I think I would still say that. Here's the thing again. It's the way that the optics on that pass looked so bad from the get-go. Ben kind of backpedaling and throwing off his back foot and throwing a really, you know, like kind of – it wasn't, you know, Ben stepping in and making a throw to somebody. I mean, he threw off his back foot and he threw a pass that – was unlike any of these other 65 passes he threw the whole game. He kind of, you know, I won't say it was a duck because I think he threw it the way he wanted to throw it, but it was a high arcing ball that hung in the air. That just doesn't seem like, for me, it wouldn't be the pass play that I called. Like I said, I'd run a play action, kind of a bootleg where Ben can just slide, you know, at the line of scrimmage where he's not taking a deep drop or something along, or, you know, just a wide receiver screen where you say to Antonio Brown, you know, see if you can get it or not. I didn't like anything about it. So I don't think I'm second guessing the stuff. I said it before the two plays. I think I tweeted that, you know, you got to run the ball here and force them to use the timeout. They didn't do it.
Right, right. And then you set up the end of the game nail-biting situation with a kicker that can kick it from 64, probably. 64 in there. Look, I mean, it crossed my mind, too. You know, scored, you know. Yeah, you got it, but is there too much time? You know, and when you face a guy like Ravens and specifically Tucker, that's always in the back of your mind in the end of the game situations there. But, you know, they got away with it, and we critique it, and that's what we're supposed to do, and you move on. So, all right, I think we whipped this offense around pretty good. Now let's move over to the other side of the football.
I mean, I don't know what you say here. So let's talk about Ryan Shazier first. Ryan Shazier is an elite player. He, I think everybody who listens to the podcast has a full understanding of what Ryan Shazier brings to this defense. And there's no question there was a big drop off in the play of both Sean Spence, who ended up starting the game, and Arthur Motes, who played, you know, I don't know how their snap breakdown day, but, you know, let's say they played roughly the same amount of time. Joe Hayden, who both Dave and I think has been, you know, a small upgrade to what the Steelers expected to have to start the season. It's not necessarily that, you know, Joe Hayden was great, but the drop off of performance to Cody Sensabaugh and Cam Sutton has been significant. And then third, the safety play that the Steelers have gotten over the past couple of weeks, and not to necessarily, you know, absolve anybody else of the weaknesses that they have, but the safety play has not been good. Mike Mitchell didn't play last week. It just overall day the defense was probably, I think, as bad as we've seen them this year, and kind of, you know, I'm certainly for a lot of people it brought memories, even though the way it was done was a little different. It takes people back to last year's AFC Championship game, which was almost exclusively, you know, by the pass, Brady carving them up. In this game, Flacco did carve them up to some degree in the pass, but man, I think what stands out is it takes people back to the Bears game early in the season. The Steelers tackling was atrocious, and Alex Collins, who runs hard, and we both pointed that out going into the game, just, you know, made the Steelers defense look bad.
All right, 64 total defensive snaps. Vince Williams obviously played the lion's share. He played 53 of them. Sean Spence played 34. Arthur Motes, excuse me, Arthur Motes played 19, and L.J. Fort played 8. Now, we went into this with being kind of under the assumption that Arthur Motes was going to start, play the lion, maybe the lion's share, but it certainly went the other way there. And I think it was obvious going into this game that you were going to see the Ravens use, you know, not change their stripes. They were going to use a lot of heavy personnel because, A, that played into their favor. You know, they want to keep those linebackers on the field. To me, that was in their favor, and it did end up working to their favor there. It took three guys to try to replace Ryan Shazier, and they still fell way, way short of that. There are a lot of runs, especially to the Ravens' right side of their offense, where you wonder, man, Shazier gets there, okay? Not only that, there just seemed to be so much miscommunication and missed assignments where you wonder, did an inside linebacker miss the assignment of having to scrape over the top to the outside because of the way the team was. There was a play, and I put a picture, a still shot of this pre-snap up on my Twitter feed, you know, about 3 o'clock in the 1 o'clock in the morning, whenever it was, you know, where it screams run right on us. and the Ravens, David Alex Collins, got a chunk of yardage there. So I think blown assignments. Is, you know, I think there were bad fills in this game. I think there were probably blown assignments by the inside linebackers, and then just the overall lack of athleticism that you don't have in there with Shazier. All of the above. When it comes to there. So, look, I mean, Spence somewhat gets a pass because, you know, back in the fold here. But even so, you know, he should have known a lot of what was going on there. You know, Arthur Motes, and look, I knew this going in. Arthur Motes wasn't going to be a factor inside. I mean, and none of them were, to be honest with you. And I think we could all see that coming, and that's easy to say ahead of time when you have a guy like Ryan Shazier because, you know, look, the guy misses tackles, but the guy also disrupts a lot of stuff. He's able to get some of these deep drops in the passing game and disrupt a lot of stuff. So really, you know, it was the loss of Shazier was very evident in that game last night, and they are really got to figure out what they're going to do with these inside guys moving forward. Now the secondary as a whole, yeah, not great. I mean,
bad, yeah. Right? Bad. Yeah. Fair to say bad.
Yeah, you know, it started off kind of okay. You know, yeah, a couple, you know, Flacco able to move the football, some easy completions in front of Cody Sensabaugh, get some zone stuff and all. But, you know, it was those chunks, that inexplicable chunks, and then the touchdown on Sean Davis. I've gone back and forth trying to look at this. I can't wait to look at the All-22 there. Initially, I thought, man, that looks like quarters coverage on that side. But you know, you look at how the outside receivers, you know, were playing. I you know, it kind of confused you. And then I thought, well, was that maybe covered too? And just Davis didn't have enough depth on there. But you know, the more I look on it, my initial call of thinking that it was quarters coverage on that side, I keep wanting to go back to that. It really is hard to me. It looks like a kind of a mismatch coverage, and it looks like there was, you know, bad communication on that as well too. But regardless of what the call was, Sean Davis just can't let him get behind him on a vertical route like that. I mean, he's in that area of the field. He's matched up on that guy. Mike Mitchell comes way over the top, you know, way late from the other side. I don't think it was on him. I think that was all on, you know, they may have thought they were playing one coverage half on half the field. The other side thought they were playing the other one. It really is. It's kind of a mismatch when you look at the lineup and how the outside corners play on Davis' side there. So I can't wait to look at that, because it looks like it's man on the outside with Sean Davis having to play cover four rules on his side. And you know, he was late.
Just Sean Davis. Look. Obviously, he there was a, you know, as easy an interception as you can have in the first drive of the game, and you know he caught it. So good on him. From there, I don't know that you could play worse than Sean Davis played. Two personal fouls, the initial run where he and Arthur Motes keep Alex Collins in bounds, and Sean Davis, as is his habit so frequently, just puts a shoulder in and doesn't try to wrap a guy up, missed blown coverages or missed coverages or just getting beat in the defensive backfield. I mean, it was a brutal night for Sean Davis. I mean, you can't sugarcoat it. I mean, it was a brutal night.
There was another play in the first half. I think it was a Mike Wallace explosive play on right side of the hash. He's the only vertical receiver on the play. Only vertical receiver on the play, and he's wide open.
Oh, that's the one that they kept pointing out that, you know, Flacco, if he hits him in stride, it's an easy touchdown. But, you know, they gave the excuse, well, he was so open, you understand why you're not trying to lay it out there for him. And that's right. You're right. He was I mean, they were lucky it wasn't a touchdown.
Right, and you know, a few other times in this game, just inexplicable. You know, whether you know what? I think what the buzzword that you're going to hear this week from Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler and several of the players is going to be miscommunication. I really think that's going to end up being the thing here with a lot of this. It was like the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing for a lot of the game here. Not only against the pass, but second level and run defense as well there too. Alex Collins is a very good running back, and he's going to be around this league for a while. So you better learn, you know, how to contain him, and he sure likes to run off that right guard, right tackle, and have some of those jump cuts there. And really, you know, that they ran the ball down the Steelers' throat, and that touchdown after. You know, what's concerning is Mike Tomlin gets that group together and has a prayer meeting over there on the very next play after the timeout.
18 yards.
You know, Alex Collins
almost untouched.
Untouched over on that side. Boy, Sean Davis, you know, he made an early stop on a short screen pass. He then had the interception. That, you know, I think he had a run stop later in the game.
He did. He had one run stop late in the game I think the next to last, the first three and out that they got, and he made a play on that, on the Steelers' left side of the defense coming up to make a tackle. But it was brutal.
Yeah, it was the wheels coming off the Corvette gift that I like to post all the time for the most part with him. You can't get those penalties, and enough with the shoulder tackles, man. Just raise your head up, wrap both arms around them, and drive them to the ground there. And, you know, look, Arthur Motes is a part of that as well, too. He's got to do a better job of wrapping up those legs and feet there on the sideline. But, I mean, that was, what, an extra 20 yards right there, and then they had the penalty. I think Artie Burns may have had a penalty, pass interference.
Artie got so – Artie took his helmet off, and he – I mean, I think the refs probably gave a little bit of mercy there, because that's a standard – it doesn't matter what's the situation. That's standard 15 yards for taking your helmet off, and he knows that. I mean, you never see guys take their helmet off, and Artie took it off, and that's – he got lucky that he didn't have 15 more tacked onto that PI, which – arguably on that play, you know, he's holding Mike Wallace well past 5 yards. So call what you want to call. If I were calling something there, I thought maybe they'd call defensive pass interference. And we're talking in the second half down the left side where they engage. And then, you know, Mike Wallace pulls up, much like we see Martavis Bryant do at times. Mike Wallace pulls up because he did have him pinned to the sideline. There's nowhere to go. It's well past 5 yards. So I could see. And the question is the ball in the air? I mean, it's hard to tell in those situations. But they called defensive pass interference, and then, you know, they already took his helmet off, and he got lucky not to be called on that one.
Yeah, and the officiating obviously was very inconsistent in that game. I thought that was a bad call on Artie. I understand why they threw the flag on AB, but I think if you just run it back through your mind before you throw that flag, you really see, okay, really, really not that bad. I understand why.
And on AB being Artie Burns here?
I'm sorry, AB and, you know, the swing at Humphrey or whatnot.
Yep. I mean, Humphrey goes at him well after the whistle. So, you know, I guess, I don't know. Did they call the swing? Did they call contact with the head? What? They just said personal foul. But, yeah, okay, that was another one.
Yeah, and
what'd you think of the initial hand fighting interference, Mike Wallace, Artie Burns on that one?
Yeah, I thought that was a bad call to call that on Artie too, especially the way I think if you're a referee and you take 2 seconds to run it back through your head real quick, maybe you don't make that. You know, maybe you don't make that throw that flag there in that situation. Now, on the flip side, the pass interference on Martavis Bryant in the end zone. At first, I thought, oh, he's all over him. He's all over his back, which he was, but the feet definitely got, you know, tripped up there. So I think that was, you know, in defense of the Ravens, I thought they kind of got hosed on that one.
I totally agree that to me, he look, somebody, a lot of people said he was holding his jersey. It's not as if these guys are playing, you know, the game you play when you're kids where, you know, you reach around somebody without trying to touch them. There's physical contact. And having a hand on the back and stuff like that, that stuff happens on every play. So that wasn't what it was called then. They didn't call them for, you know, they called pass interference. But they tangled feet. I'm with you. I agree on that one. What'd you think of the Le'Veon Bell one that wasn't called?
You know, people are not going to like this, but I thought that was kind of ticky-tack, man. I would
the
be
one that wasn't called or the one that was called?
The one that wasn't called.
Yeah.
I think that was the right non-call. I mean, if I try to put myself in the other in the position if it would have been the Steelers on defense in that play, would I be irate, you know, if they would have got called in that situation? I would have considered that a very questionable call had a flag been thrown on that. But there was a time or two, you know, conversely, I think one time in the end zone where it looked like
if he got tackled, it looked like on one play.
Right. So, you know, they're not
like gonna, they say, you could almost throw it every play, right? You could almost throw pass interference on somebody on every play.
Right. Or defensive holding or jersey tug and all like that. I mean, look at one of those deep ones down the right side of Antonio Brown. Kind of a subtle little push off, right? I mean, some good hand fighting going down the field, and then AB has away with that little sudden sudden push off to the lower section there to get himself that extra yard and a half there. And you know, you could when I saw that live, I thought maybe he was going to get called for that, but he didn't there. So look, you know, we're never going to get a perfect officiated game here, but there were definitely some questionable calls. And you know, the one with Bell, I thought I would have been I was okay with that. Let's just with a no call there.
Okay, so the secondary wasn't good. They threw in front of Cody Sensabaugh all game long. Cody Sensabaugh's, you know, I think we had hopes, you know, with the early pick against Tennessee that he'd be serviceable. He hasn't been. There's no two ways about it. He has not been making plays. Cam Sutton's finding his way. I'm not going to critique him too hard because, you know, he shouldn't be out there, but you know, for lack of a better alternative, he's getting, you know, this is trial by fire for him. So, you know, nobody did a good job. Artie maybe did a passable job in this game, depending on what you thought of the pass interference calls. But, you know, those guys weren't good. Dave, the only guy I think you can maybe say was impactful defensively was T.J. Watt. And he got some pressure at different times. Has an incredible motor, and we've talked about that. And then, you know, clearly the play at the end was a, you know, a game save, whatever term you want to use, game-ending play where he was able to run Flacco down and then a fumble out of bounds and Ravens no timeout and game over.
Yeah, and he had a nice quarterback hit in there as well, too. He's so close a few times, right? I mean, so close. And for him, it was a huge – I mean, he saved the, you know, his biggest play of the game for the last play of the game as well, too, being able to hawk down Flacco from behind. Well, what a weird sequence that was. You see the ball bounce, and you're thinking 8 seconds left, and all of a sudden the game – you know, the holy roller roll kicks in, right?
Yeah.
For lack of a better – I mean, that's what it was, right?
Yes,
You can't fumble the football forward there under 2 minutes there. So huge play with it. Look, they would have been hard pressed to score with 8 seconds left. But I mean, a quick something to the sideline for 8 yards. Where are they at then? Where did the final snap line of scrimmage?
Maybe the 26, something like that. I'll pull it up, but go ahead.
Let's see. It was the Baltimore 39-yard line.
Oh, 39, right? They got that completion to. Yeah.
So what? You know what? Real? Where did they have to get? Midfield.
So I thought about this. I think you have to. You know, realistically, let's say the 40 is a 57-yarder. So you got to be around the 40. So they had about 20 yards. They needed two 20-yard plays is how I was thinking about the drive when they got the ball.
Yeah. I mean, they 8 seconds left. You can run
it. The problem is they don't have any timeouts, so they have to throw it to the sideline.
Yeah, you try to get maybe 4 yards, 6 yards maybe on the first play, and then maybe another. You're not going to have enough time.
You got to run a 7 second play that gets you 15 yards and hope, right?
Yeah, they're not going to have enough time there. But huge play by T.J. Watt there. James Harrison dressed and saw action in this game for a grand total, I think, of 11 defensive snaps in this one. Yeah, I was going, that penalty early in the game on Deshaun Davis. On the Sean Davis interception, I'm thinking, you know, obviously the referee got the numbers wrong on that. I'm thinking, I don't remember seeing Tyson Alualu out there. That was L.J. Fort, and he trucked Ryan Jensen on that play. And I cannot wait to see the All-22 end zone view of that one. And I wonder why the penalty was called. If just one guy trying to block the other one is what it looked like to me, and then both people, you know, then they get the matching penalties. I don't quite understand that, but it was 54, not 94 on that penalty. And then another one, I think it was in the first half, David, when was it the field goal drive or the touchdown drive? David DeCastro called for a false start. Did you?
Yeah.
Did you see? I never saw the false start.
No, I didn't see it, no.
So that was another kind of questionable call in that game as well too.
Let me ask a question here because I commented on this on Twitter, and somebody pointed out I might have gotten it wrong, and I don't know the rule. So when this on the first play when the Ravens were called for illegal motion, but they ran the play off because the guy in the backfield moved a little bit early, so they it was an incomplete pass. And a Raven player was injured. And so I thought it was a big mistake by the Steelers not to accept the penalty because the down number wasn't that important. It was the yardage because you didn't want them to get in range for Tucker, and to get in range, you know, they were going to have to gain, you know, it wasn't going to be a question of snaps. It was going to be a question of time and yards. So I wanted them to take the penalty. They declined it. But at the same time, a Ravens player was hurt and they forced the use of the last timeout. Dave, did the Steelers have to decline the penalty to have the Ravens use the timeout? I mean, I know this is kind of a nuanced question, but I wondered if the referees explained that to Tomlin. You have to decline this for the timeout to count or not. And I don't even know how to look up the answer to that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's the kind of questions you would ask probably on Tuesday if you were in that room. That's a great question. Here's what you need to do, listeners, just in case somebody doesn't ask Mike Tomlin the question on Tuesday. When Bob Labriola has his ask and answer, whenever it is, today, tomorrow, whenever, y'all pepper him send him 30 of that same question at least out there, guys and ladies, and that way he's gonna wonder why the heck are all these questions coming in about the same topic. Don't tell him we don't.
Which will annoy the heck out of him.
Right, because he'll have to actually do some work and look this
one
up.
He hates that minutia.
But don't tell him Dave and Day did it because he hates the hell out of me.
He thinks clock management's unimportant.
Right. He hates the hell out of David and some of the questions that he asked. So about 50 of you hit Bob. Hey, you think I'm kidding? About 50 of you hit Bob Labriola up and ask him if what happened there during that final possession on that illegal motion, and the Ravens were charged a timeout. Did the Steelers have to decline that illegal motion penalty in order for the Ravens to get charged that timeout. That's going to be the easiest way. We're going to have somebody. we're going to have somebody else here dig the ditch.
Right. Exactly.
My dad always told me, look, you know, it's unimportant how the light bulb gets screwed in sometimes, you know. So, you know, that's what we're looking here for. So, I want to see the power of the Terrible Podcast in action, and about 50 of you pepper Bob Labriola with that question on his ask and answer. that should be funny. But it's a great question, Dave. I don't know the answer, and it would take probably 30 minutes of searching the Google and the internet to figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. So that was my, you know, question about Steelers strategy end of the game. Those two issues with the Steelers not running the ball at the end, and then how that penalty call worked. So the Steelers come out. Let's just give a little props to the Ravens. One is Dave on Football Outsiders and their DVOA method of analyzing. The Ravens were the number one defense coming into this game in the league, number two against the pass. You have watched them on film a lot. You've talked about how, you know, stout they've been throughout the season, and more so of late. Clearly, the Steelers took them apart. If you're a Raven fan right now and you look at what Collins did and Flacco did, you look at the penalty yards that, you know, aren't reflected in the stats on the offense, and then you see what happened to the defense. If you're a Ravens fan, are you feeling good about where they are kind of heading, you know, still as a serious playoff contender? Because, you know, these two teams can play again.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is a team now. Their offense, you know, has been kind of aided by turnovers as of late, except last night. But in you know, whatever excuse you want to use for them being able to use, you know, the sentiment that I got, and really for the most part after every game, the Steelers defense gives up a lot of stuff. They always say, well, it's self-inflicted stuff on our part, self-inflicted. You know, they wouldn't have had that if we wouldn't have let them, you know, kind of talk. But I mean,
sure, look, sure. It's the other guys. It's always Steelers determine things offensively and defensively.
Right, but I mean, make no mistake. I mean, the Ravens are paid to play and game plan as well too, and you know, they executed last night. But you need some strong defense to be able to advance in the playoffs, and I think they have that even with Jimmy Smith out. Okay. The question is if they get into a game where their defense struggles in the playoffs, will their offense be able to pick up the pieces? And, you know, they got a good running back in Alex Collins. They're very short at the tight end position, and, you know, say what you will about Macklin and Mike Wallace. I mean, Joe Flacco entered this game, David, with 25% completion percentage on deep balls, and I think second leading deep ball catch guy on the team heading into last night was Ben Watson. All right, that's absurd. So, that gives you pause. Man, why the heck were they able to complete so many deep balls against the Steelers, you know, Sunday night there? But the answer to your question is they can be a dangerous team in the playoffs. Do they have what it takes to win it all this year? Talking about the Ravens, I don't think so. But somebody going to get a rough first round matchup, I think, if they draw the Ravens.
Let me ask you this question: if you're the Steelers and you're playing your first playoff game at home, and you could pick your opponent today, obviously things are going to change. If you could pick your opponent today between the Chargers, the Jaguars, and the Ravens, who would you most like to face? Who would you least like to face?
Give me my options again.
Baltimore, LA Chargers, and Jacksonville.
Man. I guess I'd probably want to play the Ravens again. I've watched every Chargers game, but I haven't watched every Chargers game. Does that make sense?
Chargers scared the hell out of me with that offense right now. Their offense feels like the Jags defense. Honestly, I might, maybe just because of Bortles, but maybe I should be saying the same about Flacco. I might want to play the Jags, but The Chargers scare me. But, you know, the answer for our listeners is the Steelers are probably going to play, you know, one of those three teams. So,
would you believe that Buffalo's the number six seed, it looks like, right now in the AFC?
I'm just staring at that myself. They a game they could have lost if Vinatieri hits a last-second field goal, and they end up winning. And, you know, the Chiefs looked – yesterday, at least, they looked dangerous again. But the AFC, you've got – I know that on top, it's the Steelers and the Patriots, and they're, you know, record-wise, they are head and shoulders above everybody else. But I'm telling you, the Jags looked, even though they gave up two late crazy touchdown passes, they looked good yesterday. Bortles has had the best month of his career. The Chargers' offense looks phenomenal right now. By the way, they, you know, they're putting up points at will. The Chiefs were a little better, and you know, we saw what the Ravens did to the Steelers. So, you know, I'm not hall passing either the Patriots or the Steelers to the AFC Championship game at this point.
I guess if you're a Steelers fan, you'd like the way this AFC seating sits right now, and you probably should root for Jacksonville, Kansas City, Tennessee, and Buffalo to win out. Right?
Right, because that knocks the Ravens out, huh?
And it keeps the Chargers out.
Oh, is that right? The Chargers are out too.
Right.
Oh, yeah, right. Right, because the Bills are ahead of the Chargers and the Ravens. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'll tell you. Yeah, the answer is yes. If the Ravens and Chargers don't get in, that would be a blessed event, I think, for the Steelers.
Well, and here's the thing. If I don't think Buffalo's going to be able to hang around, though. I mean, I still see Baltimore getting
Buffalo's last three games. Just for the record, Dolphins at home, at Patriots, at Dolphins. So.
Well, they,
you know,
they
certainly win two of those.
Right. They're not going to beat the Patriots, right?
Yeah, assuming the Patriots have something to play for. If the Patriots lose and the Steelers actually don't play till after the Patriots, Steelers play Christmas Day. The Patriots play Christmas Eve day. So, yeah, they'll play that game. The Patriots, yeah. Well, I mean, so let's just look at all three schedules for fun. So let's say the Bills go 2-1. Okay, so you would assume one conference loss. The Ravens' last three games, they've got the easy schedule. Remember, they've got at the Browns, the Colts at home, and then the Bengals at home. So they've got a very good chance of winning out, which would obviously put them ahead of the Bills. And then the Chargers finished their last three games. It's this week. They're at the Chiefs on a Sunday night game. So that's a massive game for both teams, tied for the top of the AFC North at 7-6 or AFC West, and then at the Jets and then the Raiders at home. So the Chargers probably a little bit perilous with the Chiefs here. Let's throw the Titans in the mix at 8-5, and they finish at the 49ers, the Rams at home, and the Jaguars at home. So maybe the Titans end up being the odd team out.
Yeah, you know, we could sit here in a few more weeks and it'd be Baltimore and the Chargers as number 5 and 6, you know, in this thing. But anyway, yeah, it's finally Patriots week here. People have been talking about Patriots week for the last 7 weeks. Well, it's finally here, and you know, obviously, I think so. Maybe the early lines, the early one or two line floating around there, I think has the Patriots favored by 2.5. That's not probably surprising at all. One thing we haven't talked about, the inactive list ahead of the game. No surprises there, really, outside of the fact of J.J. Wilcox was down. I thought maybe Xavier Grimble would be the final inactive there. As it turned out, J.J. Wilcox did indeed get the DeMarcus Van Dyke treatment, if you will, for those couple of special team penalties that he had last week. If he doesn't get those penalties last week, you have to wonder maybe J.J. Wilcox would have dressed.
I think he was benched. I think that's exactly why he was benched.
So that was your number 7. A lot of people wondering, why haven't the Steelers put Ryan Shazier on IR this week? Is there anything to read into that? Absolutely not. None whatsoever. The reason they did not put him on IR this week, well, it's several fold. A, you did not need the roster spot. if you were going, you know, you did not need to promote.
That's the reason.
Right. You did not need to promote a guy, give him a game check just to be on the inactive list. Okay. So.
And it's not as if there was not, they were missing a body at practice. You know, Spence got signed. That, you know, it was all taken care of.
Right. So, you know, the other thing, too, is it gives you a few days to kind of watch post-surgery, minor miracle, what have you with him. But the main reason why they didn't place him on IR is they didn't have to. They did not need a body there. Now, you have Juju Smith-Schuster coming off of his one-game suspension this week. So that's probably going to be your roster move is – Ryan Shazier goes to IR and Juju goes back to the 53-man roster off the reserve suspended list. Injuries during the game. Mike Tomlin called it on Bell a quad?
Quad. Well, he said a quad. I mean, that
looked like a hyper-extended knee to me.
Yeah, nobody, you know, look, Mike's not trying to be – Mike's job isn't to get the injuries right post-game conference. So if he slightly misspoke, somebody said, you know, hyperextended knee, quad contusion, whatever, who knows. So he said quad, but, you know, I wouldn't take it as gospel.
Yeah, and thank your lucky stars because that could have been similar to the injury that he suffered against the Bengals in the regular season finale a few years ago as well too. You see the replay of that and it looked like he got hyperextended there. So
yeah, I don't expect to see him practicing Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
Just for a variety of reasons, you know, primarily it's week 14.
Right. And, 15. Yeah, week 15. Let's see. Alejandro Villanueva left, two plays, with a shoulder, but came back with a shoulder, but came back into the game. And then obviously, as we already talked about, Vance McDonald left with a shoulder injury and did not return. That's going to be worth watching. Did Mike Mitchell come back into the game after he left?
He did.
Okay, because Mike Tomlin did not mention him. I forgot to look real quick to notice if he came back into the game there. So, wow. We could go another hour here because there's so many things we didn't hit that happened. You know, more in the second half, I think, than in the first half. There, defense obviously has to get better. We'll talk about on Wednesday. We'll have Ben Volen in from the Boston Globe, right?
Yeah, Boston Globe. Ben's been with us a bunch of times, and we organized that early, so he'll be with us on Wednesday.
Yeah, and look, I think right now if you're a Steelers fan and you're looking at this Patriots game, and we'll obviously break it down a little bit more in depth there, you know, do you think they're going to be able to hold them to 21 or under points, David?
Hell no.
So what's the other alternative?
Score 50. By the way, the Steelers ran 89 offensive plays to 64 for the Ravens. I mean, some long drives in there. That's the high number of the year by far.
Yeah, and that's another thing you got to consider, man. This defense got a lot of work against the Ravens as well, too. It's going to be easy analysis, I think, on this week. The Steelers have to outscore the Patriots.
Absolutely. I mean, they got to. I mean, there is a lot of work to be done defensively. They got exposed again. I think there's nothing to. Take us to back to where we were at the beginning. It's a complete 180 from the Steelers to the offense way underperforming, the defense overperforming, and now it's the offense performing the way we expected at the beginning of the year, and the defense not getting it done.
Yeah, and obviously, if you lose to the Patriots in this game, you can still. I haven't looked at the clinching scenarios as far as them getting the number two seed.
They win. They're two games up on the Jags, but obviously they can't be in a tie. So if they win two of the last three, they're guaranteed a bye.
Right. So that would end up making, unless Jacksonville loses a game, the Steelers might
Cleveland game might matter.
Right, that Cleveland game might matter. That's where I was going with that. So, but on the flip side, Here's the thing, you know, do you want to face the Patriots in the playoffs, David? I mean, it would make it a lot sweeter if you beat a, you know, to beat them twice.
Yeah, you play who's in front of you. So, I mean, look, the Patriots are playing the best football in the NFL right now, and the Steelers are going to see it up close and personal. 4:25 next week, finally not a night game.
Well, and where I'm going with this, too, is I think if you're a Steelers fan, you would want New England to face either Jacksonville or Baltimore.
Didn't San Diego play them tough up early in the, like, week three, didn't they? I think they lost by 8 points and a late Patriots touchdown this year. Am I getting my seasons confused? I feel like the Chargers, before the Chargers were good, I'm going to pull it up here, the Patriots schedule. They beat them at home 21-13 with a late touchdown, beat them by 8 points. And this is when the Patriots were playing well. So, you know, they didn't tear the Chargers apart.
The Los Angeles Chargers.
The Los Angeles forever, San Diego.
We're going to say San Diego for the next 5 years because it's just ingrained in there.
FBI says 51% chance Steelers-Pats AFC Championship game. To me, that feels about right, about 50-50 that those two get through.
All right, we've gone this long. Let's talk a few minutes about what else happened. Boy, Carson Wentz and the Eagles, man. Wow.
Incredibly unfortunate, and he stood in there and threw that touchdown pass on fourth down after, you know, I was looking at some of the plays again this morning. Clearly on those last couple plays, he is standing in the pocket, unable to move his feet, and he throws the touchdown pass, a great catch by Aguilar, Alshon Jeffrey maybe, catches both ends of the football. The only thing disconcerting about that game is there was a personal foul on third down call, a taunting call against Jermaine, the drawn a blank on the corner for the Rams. Jermaine Johnson, who looked like a really ticky-tack call, which would have been a field goal. They ended up driving for a touchdown. Those points were the difference in the win versus the loss. But, it's the Nick Foles show for the Eagles the rest of the way.
Who's the most dangerous team, sans that injury in the NFC right now? Is it the Saints? None of these teams have Case Keenum's got experience, but he's not a playoff.
Carolina all of a sudden's playing well. I mean, you know, Cam had a big late run to clinch a victory or sort out a victory for Carolina. I think any team, Vikings, Saints, Eagles, Rams, Falcons, Panthers. That's six teams without saying the Seahawks. Honestly, any one of them can come out of there. I think the NFC is loaded.
Would you bet my money on any two teams guaranteeing that either two teams will make it to the Super Bowl coming out of that side at this point?
Yeah, I would. I would just because that's a fun bet. And I'd take the Vikings and I would take the Eagles. But with no – I mean, I'd assume I'd lose, but I like that bet. That's a great bet.
I would take the Saints or the Panthers right now, I think. One of those two teams. Brutal injury for the Eagles for sure. All right.
How about the Browns? The Browns, 21-7. They give up a fourth down. You know, credit to Hundley. He did well. DeShone Kizer played he played as well as you can play in the first half and was bad in the second half. The receivers were good in the first half. They didn't get opportunities in the second half. The defense couldn't come up with a big play, and they lose an OT. Tough loss for the Browns.
Aaron Rodgers is going to be back this week, and if Green Bay runs the table, they're going to get in at 10-6? They'd have to get in at 10-6, you would think, right?
No, because all those teams, their records are so good right now. If you look at the numbers, in the NFC, you've got – they're 7-6. The Lions are 7-6, and the Cowboys are 7-6. And they've got in front of them. The Seahawks are 8-5. The Falcons are 8-5. The Panthers are 9-4. So they've got teams ahead of. They got too many teams ahead of them. They're a game behind three teams already, and have two teams tied with them. So there is no guarantees. But their last three games are at the Panthers, and then Vikings at home, and then at the Lions. So they got an incredibly tough schedule. They'll have to run the table. That'll certainly knock the Panthers back and the Lions out. So if they do it, great. I guess they could. but I would bet against, heavily against it.
So you don't think we're going to see a 10-6 team not make the playoffs this year? Or you do think we're going to see a 10-6 team not make the playoffs?
Let's see. I don't think the Packers will get there. I don't think the Lions or the Cowboys will get there. So, yeah, I think Seattle's not going to make it at 10-6. Seattle or Atlanta.
All right. We've done enough damage, and it still feels like we didn't do enough.
I'm sure there are plays we missed that we'll come back to.
Yeah, maybe we'll try.
People are going to want to talk about Javon Hargrave and coverage on Daniel Woodhead.
Oh, I refuse
to talk. It wasn't the matchup they were trying to get. They thought they would get to the quarterback. They didn't.
Bless his heart, he got spun around. You can't even. What do you expect to happen in that? Hey, and here's the thing too. Hargrave, a few plays later, forced a fumble, but he did so trying to lower the shoulder. I think if he wraps up there, he doesn't force the fumble. Of course, the I think Mike Wallace recovered that fumble, Yeah, boy, what a mess on defense right now. They're going to have to get it straightened out in a hurry here. So we'll get back after it again on Wednesday, David. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot and tell me who, tell me the Steelers need to fire Mike Tomlin and all these guys at 11-2. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want nothing, as one Twitter says, told me last night, who got mad at me. If you want to see nothing but clickbait articles, go to SteelersDepot.com.
Review us on iTunes, please. We haven't the reviews have been great last time we asked, but we haven't had any reviews up in the last month. If we can just – if you get a chance, spend a couple of minutes at iTunes and give us a review. Thank you.
The guy said on Twitter, Neil Spoony Spoon Burger or whatever, said I'm not even sure Dave is a Steelers fan. I think he just does it because it's a lucrative market, lucrative team for him to cover. And he also said nothing but clickbait articles on Steelers Depot, yet he listens to the podcast three times a week there. All right, enough of that. If you want to donate to the cause, if you don't think we're nothing but clickbait articles, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button, upper right navigational bar. Until Wednesday, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.